Well, they became famous as a defense strategy in the San Francisco murder trial of Dan White. But 15 billion of the golden cakes later, we pause in our eating to ask, what's in a Twinkie?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 634th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Port Villa who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at MetroFarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Howdy.
Producer Carol Stafford.
Hello there.
Parmley Taff.
Hello.
And what's this? Studio audience. Hello, Dave.
Good morning.
Folks, Twinkies are, in many respects, industry's perfect food. Pick up a package and feel the moist softness of the perfectly colored cakes wrapped snugly inside that perfectly clear plastic. Don't delay. Rip open a bag and take a big bite out of that beautiful cake. Yeah, not nibble. A big bite. Mmm. Enjoy the perfectly sweet stickiness as a cake dissolves as if by magic in your mouth. You'll just be getting started when the second wave of sweetness rolls through your mouth with a wholesome taste of butter, egg, and vanilla. Mmm. But here's the best part. That Twinkie will hold its sweetness and flavors for you while sitting on the shelf for up to almost a month. There truly is genius in that bag. Little wonder, then, that we eat 500 million Twinkies every year. But today we are going to take pause and ask, what on earth is in a Twinkie? And who better to ask than Steve Ettlinger, who is the author of Twinkies Deconstructed. Thank you for joining us, Steve.
I'm delighted to be here.
You know, that's the first taste of Twinkies I've had for since I was a kid, I guess. I can't remember.
Well, you know, I've had great fun since Twinkie Deconstructed was published, because people tend to come up to me. This is really bizarre, because there's nothing to do with the book, and they confess as to whether they've been eating Twinkies or not since they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
They say, and they confess two things. One is, I really don't eat them anymore. I eat them all the time. I had one this morning. I had one just like you before I speak to you. They're always telling me about it. And the other thing they confess is, you know, I actually was more of a cupcake person.
Oh, right. Well, it wasn't Twinkie.
Because, you know, the book's about the ingredients, not about your taste.
Sure.
But it's funny. We relate to Twinkies in a very, very strong way.
Well, producer Carol Stafford bought a bunch of Twinkies this morning for the show, and she went into the convenience store and bought a bunch of them, and she looked at the clerk, and she said, I bet you don't see this happening very often. He looked back at her and said, you'd be surprised.
Oh, my.
So, Steve, from the eyes of your child, the question, what is polysorbate 60, Daddy? Is that how it all started?
Yeah, well, I have, it's a long story. Can I go on for a moment here?
A little, yeah, go ahead.
A little, you know, 3 hours or so?
Yeah.
I've worked on 40 books, but I've done a lot of popular reference books, and I had done a few food books that were related to food ingredients. But they were about natural ingredients, the hops in beer,
mm-hmm.
the Corot Beer for Dummies, where the best grapes come from to make wine. You know, I did a wine book, cheese, ethnic cuisine, you know, what is wheat la coche, you know, stuff like that. And I began wondering about the artificial ingredients. Did they have a terroir? Is there a particular place where the best red number 40 comes from? You know, that type of thing. And I realized that I couldn't do a book on artificial ingredients just like that. It would be, because there are thousands of them. And I wasn't quite sure how to approach it. I was debating what to do when I was feeding ice cream bars to my little kids at the beach one day. And I was reading the ingredient label, like I always do with slack jogs. I had no idea what it was saying to me. And my kids asked, well, what are you reading, Daddy? And I said, the ingredient label. What does that tell us, Daddy? Oh, it tells, you know, as a wise old parent, I say, oh, that tells us what's in these ice cream bars we're eating, dearie. And, of course, my kids did what most kids do. They asked more questions, and I went down that slippery slope that many parents do of losing authority. What's in these? Oh, let's see, red number 40, high fructose corn syrup, polysorbate 60. And I realized I was lost.
You were toast. And
I was toast. And my little daughter then asked, Daddy, where does polysorbate 60 come from? So this is the answer. The Twinkie Deconstructed was born out of general curiosity, but inspired by that question, which I was asking as well.
And, when it gets right down to it, we all ask that question.
Of course.
When we have enough nerve to read the ingredient label, we go, my God, what is polysorbate 60?
Sure, I'm sure you've all read the label of the cereal box, at least.
But what is it about Twinkies? I mean, and you've come out with this book a couple years ago, and you're on it seems like a never-ending roadshow on Twinkies now. Why the fascination with Twinkies?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. I have two theories, though, because it is a strong attachment. One is, I think the most important one is the name. It's just a cute name. Now, some of your friends may have names that end in Y.
I think Nikki James could be called Twinkie, our engineer.
There you go. But, you know, Nikki, for example, is an endearing name.
It is, right.
Andy, you know. My wife's name ends in a Y, and she gets upset that I don't call her Honey more often. And I said, well, because your name is cute and endearing, you know. And I think Twinkie is probably an endearing name. It's sort of a cute name. And the other thing is their shape, little blonde cakes, you know. But we eat more cupcakes, So go figure.
They are. Yeah. And they've kind of become the icon of industrial foods simply because they have so many things in them.
Yeah. In fact, well, that's why, getting back to how I did the book, the idea, I was searching for a way to organize this. This is a big challenge when you do any reference book, but it's going to be interesting. You got to find an interesting way to organize it that makes sense. So I thought I would try to find a well-known product that had an ingredient list which would lend itself to book treatment at a chapter per ingredient. So it had to have more than three and fewer than 500 ingredients. It had to, you know, I figured 12 to 20 chapters. I mean, when you start a book, a little footnote, you actually have these practical considerations of, like, how long it's going to be.
Sure.
You know? Is it going to be illustrated? You know, that type of thing. So there's that, and I had to have a spread of ingredients. That is, some preservatives, some colorants, some flavorants, you know, not just one or the other. So I looked at Yoo-Hoo, a chocolate drink, and Campbell's tomato soup, and, you know, the breads, you know, Entenmann's cakes. And these things didn't quite work for me. When I found Twinkies, I thought, oh, man, that table of that ingredient list would be terrific. And the Twinkie ingredient list is the table of contents of Twinkie Deconstructed.
So in that respect, it's like the perfect industrial food for you.
Absolutely. Well, I like your comment that it's almost the industry's perfect food. Continue to research industrial food with great pleasure, even though my personal taste is to eat fresh and whole and really, really tasty.
So before we go on, do you eat Twinkies?
No. I mean, you know, I don't avoid them for professional reasons. I eat them. Oh, I had a weird experience. Can we digress for a moment?
Please.
I had a weird experience about a week ago, 2 weeks ago. I was on a national radio program. Your direct competitor, Sirius NFL Radio. And I was hesitant to actually go because I was starting to think how it related to me. But, they were real enthusiastic, and they were having Twinkie Day. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like fun. So at 8 in the morning, I'm in a tiny radio studio. You know, radio studios, shock to you, I'm sure, are usually crowded.
Oh, yeah.
With gear. And this was further crowded with very large men because they were, the host was Carl Banks, the former linebacker. And all the producers were football players. They're really big guys. And so we're jammed in there. And the idea was that, I didn't know this when I arrived until after we were on the air, was that every few moments, like they do on so many morning radio shows, they were going to have a funny sound. And that was the signal to eat a Twinkie and drink a Red Bull.
Oh, God.
Now, I've been asked to eat Twinkies on camera, and I oblige. And I ate Twinkies while I was researching the book because, I was talking to people about the flavor, the texture. You know, talk to bakers. you want to, yeah. What can I say? You want to do your research. You want to know right. What they're talking about, and they tell you about texture and moist mouthfeel. And I went through this with books about beer and wine. Of course, with the beer, I had to do a lot of research, and that was real hard to do. But anyway, so they're ringing this bell and say, okay, Twinkie time. And I thought I'd eat one. I ate a bite. It was 8 in the morning, and I didn't even touch the Red Bull. And two things happened. One was they insisted that I say that Twinkies were okay to eat, that they were okay, that they were a food and so forth, which I'm loath to say because, as a nutritionist will tell you, it's a treat, you know, it's a dessert. Right. Eat it every now and then if you want. Well, who cares? You know, it's like a dangerous sport, you know. I strap on these long, hard things on my feet and throw myself down a snow-covered mountain.
So at the outset, did you survive it?
I survived it, but they were staggering when they took me to the elevator. They said, oh, I don't feel so good.
There you go.
Oh, God.
Folks, we're talking Twinkies, but more than Twinkies, we're talking the ingredients in Twinkies, and we're talking about the industrialization of our food. Do you have an ingredient that you want to know about? I'll bet Steve can tell you about it. Pick up your phone and join us. 831-479-1080, 800-624-2665. Right back. Stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.farm.com.
Hey, we're back, and today we're talking about Twinkies. When's the last time you had a Twinkies? Well, the last time I had a Twinkie was about 38 seconds ago, and I can still taste it. You know, the interesting thing about polysorbate 60, which is one of the ingredients we're going to be talking about, you tell the wonderful story about how the engineer told you, don't put any of that stuff on your tongue because you won't be able to taste your food for a week, right?
That was amazing.
But that's one of the things that holds the taste, and that's one of the things we're going to be talking about. But before we get to polysorbate 60 and all of the good things that are on, how many ingredients are there in the modern Twinkies?
39. An amazing 39. And to be fair, some of those, about five or so, are in enriched flour, which you would be putting in your cake if you baked it at home, thinking you're making a homemade cake without chemicals. That is artificial ingredients.
So let me ask you this. If each ingredient were isolated, mm-hmm. what percentage of them would we actually eat as a food?
Flour? Well, there's some sugar in there.
Mm-hmm.
Corn syrup is a food. A lot of them actually qualify as food. In fact, one of them, I have to jump ahead, because there's all the corn starch and so forth.
Right.
That's food, although, you know, it's created. Not natural.
Yeah.
There's.
What percentage of them would we actually eat if they were isolated?
Would you go out? You mean like and either buy or grow?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Flour. I'm mm-hmm. running. That's about it. Sugar.
Flour and sugar.
There's water in there. Well, whole eggs are listed, but there's 1/500th of an egg in each Twinkie. The way I figure it, because they sell 500 million. Twinkies a year, and they say they buy a million eggs. Otherwise...
So there's 1/500th of an egg in each Twinkie?
Yeah, salt, something
salt,
to eat.
Okay.
No, that's it. Out of 39, that's it.
What, five there?
Well, flour. What did we say? Flour, mm-hmm. sugar. This is a great question. No one's asked me before. Flour, sugar. Water, I think we shouldn't count. You could buy corn starch and corn syrup. Now, they have 8 corn products in there. But
well, let me make it simpler then. Let's take us back to the original Twinkie, invented in 1930.
Yeah.
What was in the original Twinkie?
Well, as far as we know, no one has the official recipe. But I interviewed the grandson of the guy who invented them.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it was like any other cake: flour, sugar, butter, eggs, milk, probably, and banana flavor, probably bananas.
Mm-hmm. Flour, sugar, butter, eggs, and milk.
Yeah, now they may have had an emulsifier in there called lecithin, which has been in use for some time, mm-hmm. and they might have put in some mono and diglycerides, which have, well, no, I don't think so. I don't know my history exact. I shouldn't say I don't know it, which
but
one.
Time,
I don't. But no one knows exactly when these things became available or if Hostess used them.
Okay, so the original Twinkie had a shelf life of what?
Just a few days. They started getting moldy, like any homemade cake.
Mm-hmm. So,
by the way, you guys are probably into farmers markets and the like,
right.
And I know the big problem for farmers markets is how to regulate the baked goods.
Right.
Because you and I both know that, you know, if it's bread, it can sit out there for a while, nothing's going to happen. It'll probably dry out. But what about something with a cream filling?
Boom.
Yeah.
So the original shelf life of a Twinkie was 2 days.
Probably, yeah, just a few days. I made homemade Twinkies here. I made an organic cake mix with mm-hmm. Whipped cream in the inside. Cream, sugar, vanillas. By the way, really good.
We were wondering about the taste of the original Twinkie.
Yeah. Anyway, most of those disappeared right away because everybody ate them up. But I wrapped a few in plastic and put them inside. They were green within a week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, green.
So there was a problem then. You know, you have this great invention, but it only has a shelf life of 2 days.
Yeah, that's no good for anybody.
And
ask any baker.
Right, of course.
You don't want to run out, and you don't want to have spoiled food.
And so we embark on this incredible trip to add distance and time to the product by adding different ingredients and taking out the ingredients that spoil. Which ingredients spoil quickest? In that original...
The dairy. It's the dairy ingredients.
Okay.
That's the big kicker, which is why...
So the butter and milk.
Buttermilk eggs.
Buttermilk eggs.
And that's why most of the artificial ingredients, which have to do with adding or retaining moisture and prolonging shelf life, are, in a sense, egg substitutes and milk substitutes. For example, mono and diglycerides. When you make a tasty sauce that needs a little creaminess to it, you add milk or cream or
right.
butter.
Right.
And in that milk, cream, and butter are mono and diglycerides that, you know, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So also one of the ingredients in, two other ingredients in Twinkies are sweet dairy whey, which would be naturally present in milk, and sodium and calcium caseinate, which is a milk. You know, like a dried milk. In fact, the original Twinkie may have been made with dried milk just because it was industrially produced.
Right.
Which doesn't mean it won't spoil. But those ingredients are, you know, are simply isolated from the natural product and put in dry.
Right. So here we, yeah, but which makes them real anyway. But the real problem with the original product then was butter, milk, and eggs.
Yeah.
Which.
Yeah, flour is stable.
Isn't that where the taste came from? The butter and the milk.
I suppose the taste and the mouth feel,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the all the pleasure, sure.
So where do you start taking out the real things and putting in the manufactured things that add shelf life and distance to the product?
Well, I think the first thing to take out, I'm not a food scientist, my guess is they'd say, you know, all three,
mm-hmm.
but... My sense is that eggs become, you know, the most problematic, the
right.
raw egg, even though raw eggs in your refrigerator keep longer than milk. You know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's the milk. But, you know, once you get the fresh milk out of there, you solve a multitude of problems. Now, milk doesn't hold up real well without refrigeration.
Right. So where did they start adding to the original recipe first?
Well, I asked around, and no one knows. No one kept
no
track
one
of
knows.
It. And well, several reasons why. One is companies, you know, don't always want to have a corporate
sure.
mentality that they keep history, and they change. They've been bought and sold, and, you know, become divisions and so forth over the years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking 70 years here, or 79 years.
Right.
And the other thing is, each bakery has modified things a little bit because of their equipment differences. For example, as Hostess expanded, they bought bakeries. Like in the New York area, they bought a regional bakery called Drake's Cakes, and now all those Drake's factories are Hostess factories. So they come with whatever equipment they come with, and maybe it gets updated, what if they replace the big baking and mixing machines tomorrow? They'll get the latest, greatest. So suddenly the batter needs to be thicker or thinner or, you know, has less or more of one thing or another. It's modified, and maybe they do better with liquid sugar. Maybe they do better with corn syrup for the sweetener. I don't know. But they vary it a little bit, hard to say.
So from the original recipe of five ingredients, wheat, sugar, butter, water, eggs, or I guess not water, but eggs and milk, we now have 31 ingredients?
39
ingredients.
Yeah. Well, one of the ingredients, that was a whole bunch of ingredients were added to the flour by the National Health Program that we started that works so well, called a flour enrichment.
Okay, good. So when we get back, I'd like to start off on the ingredients in a Twinkie and the reasons why we put them in there. And we'll start with the enriched flour. But I do want to hear the story about polysorbate 60.
Oh, got to hear that.
Because I've always wondered, what the heck? I'm just like your daughter. Daddy, what is polysorbate 60? Got to find out.
You got to behave or I won't tell you.
Yeah, but there's also the phosphates and the natural and artificial flavors and the sorbic acid and the red and yellow dye. And
all that good stuff.
And dozens of other things in the Twinkie and in our industrial food. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Steve Ettlinger. And we're talking about Twinkies, but more specifically, we're talking about the ingredients in Twinkies that give industrial food their shelf life. So that we can buy food that comes from thousands of miles away. And I wonder if you could actually measure how many miles go into the making of a Twinkie. Now, there's a question for
That's
Steve.
That's a great question.
Right back. Hey, we're back, and we've got a big question. How many miles go into the making of a Twinkie? I mean, at one time, you know, when we had food, it used to come from someplace. But it seems like if you look at the ingredient label on a Twinkie and you see 39 ingredients, they must come from everywhere. Steve Ettlinger, where do they come from?
Everywhere.
They do come from everywhere.
Yeah, high school class really got into my book, and they assigned people different things to do. One plotted out all the different elements on the periodic table that go into making a Twinkie, and another one plotted out the various states they come from. But there are a lot of countries they come from, notably China and India, and perhaps Switzerland. Most of our artificial ingredients are made in a wide variety of places, but more importantly, they use chemicals that come from the even wider variety of places because they use the basic industrial chemicals.
Wow. Like?
Well, sulfur and iron and calcium. I mean, all the basic chemicals that drive industry, especially petroleum, are necessary to make artificial food ingredients. Petroleum contributes through, whether it's crude oil or natural gas, to directly to artificial flavors, artificial colors, vitamins. That really blew my mind. The vitamins were squeezed from berries and bark, mostly made from petroleum or fermented. Sorbic acid, part of polysorbate 60, sodium bicarbonate, cellulose gum.
And so these come from all over the world.
Yeah, I mean, I link things like cellulose gum, which is mostly from the fuzz on cotton seeds and also from trees, has a natural source at its base. But the processing relies on chemicals either in a reaction with the original or in some sort of treatment, like some things are soaked in sulfur dioxide. Some things are soaked with a little lye. Mm-hmm. You need a sodium source. You might get it from one of those things. Well, those aren't foods. Those are industrial chemicals. But you need the sodium source. And in the chemical reaction, that's what you get. You get sodium, which by itself is harmful. But when it's mixed with something like another harmful thing like chloride, guess what? You get table salt. Okay.
So essentially, of the 39 ingredients in a Twinkie, almost 34 of them are manufactured from some kind of chemical process somewhere in the world.
Right. And they're all treated somehow or rely on petroleum just for, you know, heating, transportation, cooking, whatever it is.
Wow. So it would be actually incalculable how many thousands of miles go into a Twinkie.
I'd like to challenge a graduate student with a big grant to find the carbon footprint out. I mean, I suppose it can be done. I'd love to do it, right?
Let's start with enriched flour. That's the big ingredient, number one. What is it? What do they say when they enrich flour? And this is part of a national program that popped up when during the Great Depression.
No, afterwards, in the beginning of World War II, just coincidentally. You know, 100 years ago, people were dying of pellagra and beriberi. I mean, there were terrible diseases that were really related to poor nutrition, and we've wiped them out in large part by putting nutrients, vitamins, minerals, into their diets surreptitiously. That is, through just putting it in flour.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it has to do with poor nutrition choices. This is not to put down the poor people, largely in the South at the beginning of the last century, who were eating a lot of corn, but they weren't growing the local. They weren't growing vegetables and eating vegetables and fruits. They were growing corn and tobacco and stuff. So they had a poor diet, and you know, many people still do, but they don't get sick with pellagra because they're eating, even if they eat white bread now, they're getting, you know, niacin or thiamine mononitrate.
Where do the vitamins come from?
Well,
who's manufacturing our vitamins?
The vitamins in whole flour, in white flour, are just a few B vitamins, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We have to keep that in mind. Niacin, thiamine mononitrate, and riboflavin, and then folic acid and ferrous sulfate are added as well. And other than folic acid, those were all added in around 1940 or 41. I can't remember the date. The niacin is made in a refinery. Could be in China. There's a big plant in India. I mean, excuse me, in Switzerland, at the foot of the Matterhorn, which I find it's a riot. And they just refine it. It's an organic compound, so it starts with the carbon and oxygen and nitrogen from the air and so forth, and is cooked till it makes a white powder. Riboflavin is fermented, as many vitamins are, probably in a base of corn syrup with some kind of bacteria.
Hmm.
So is folic acid. Thiamine mononitrate starts, I believe, with petroleum. I'm slipping a little bit on that, but it's Saturday morning, so you have to forgive
me. Sure, sure.
And
so essentially,
most of these are made in China.
Most vitamins are made in China now.
Yeah, you know, as of fairly recently, the Chinese mm-hmm. really got serious about a lot of Chinese industries geared up to make vitamins in a big way. They'd been making them before. They were of inconsistent quality and all that. And the American chemical companies, bit by bit, have let the chemical business go overseas, vitamins included. And then there was that trend which led the Chinese to take a leadership role, but also the big vitamin companies shot themselves in their feet multiple times by price fixing and so forth that led them to all be broken up. And
I just read recently where the Chinese were caught price fixing vitamin C, so
yeah,
I guess
well,
they're getting into the act.
They cornered the market. Well, they fixed it another way. I don't. Maybe you're referring to something else, but they cornered the market in vitamin C, as everybody else's facility became obsolete. I mean,
right.
Well, I was going to tour a facility in New Jersey when I was researching the book, and I was set to go like in a week or two, and they called me to say, "Oh, it's off. We're closing it down." It was the biggest vitamin C facility in the world.
Wow.
And they closed it down because Chinese have been able to not only corner the market, but then first they undercut everybody's prices, and now that they cornered the market, guess what?
Boom.
They raised them.
Okay, let's go to the big one, polysorbate 60. I mean, you see polysorbate on all kinds of processed foods and manufactured mm-hmm. foods, but what on earth is polysorbate 60?
Well, I should bring my daughter in here and quiz her to make sure she remembers. She was 6 when she asked the question, and I've spent years researching it. There is a polysorbate tree, actually. It grows little polys. No.
right.
It would be the oil palm if there was a polysorbate tree. The oil palm, probably on a plantation in Indonesia or Malaysia, is one of the three basic ingredients or sources for polysorbate 60.
First tell me what the heck it is.
An oil palm?
Yeah,
polysorbate
60.
Oh, well.
I have no idea what it is or what it does. I mean, why do they put polysorbate 60 in a Twinkie?
It's the term is it's a great emulsifier. Okay. It replaces egg yolk, essentially.
Uh-huh.
Egg yolk is a terrific emulsifier. If you ever whipped up egg yolk with oil and water or vinegar, whatever, you can keep whipping and whipping and whipping. It's just a fantastic emulsifier.
An emulsifier brings oil and water together.
Right.
Okay.
And it holds it in a matrix.
Okay.
What you want for shelf life is something that holds the water activity down and manages the water activity in a matrix, a framework, if you will. And the upshot is that the moisture doesn't go away, so it stays relatively moist.
And thus, when you grab a bag of Twinkies and you press on them, they're still moist inside there.
I would actually argue with that. I think it's more oil that you're feeling it.
Okay.
You put your Twinkie, you got one there, I think, put one on a napkin and pick it up a few minutes later, you'll find a big grease spot.
Oh, geez, thanks. So I just have it on my belly right now.
A lot of people make muffins that way, you know, homemade muffins. Oh, they're so moist, delicious. Well, they're loaded with oil.
Okay, folks, quick break, right back with Steve Ettlinger, author of Twinkie Deconstructed and You. What's in our industrial food? 831-479-1080, 800-624-2665. Well, consider the mighty Twinkie, of which we eat approximately 500 million every year. By golly, in 1930, the Twinkie was originated made from five different ingredients: wheat, sugar, butter, milk, and eggs. Today's Twinkie has 39 ingredients. The original Twinkie back in 1930 lasted about, two or three days on the shelf, but today's Twinkie lasts 25, 30 days, almost a month. My goodness. To get that extra shelf life, to get that extra distance, we added all kinds of ingredients. Think of the miles that have gone into that little yellow cake. My goodness, 39 ingredients manufactured all over the world. Those materials shipped here and shipped there, shipped from one place to another and put through a process and then packaged and put through another process in another factory. And there must be a million miles in each of those little tiny yellow cakes. What do you think, Steve?
Millions of miles. Millions of miles. It's just astounding. And, you know, even if you want to make a homemade cake, you're going to have a pretty big carbon footprint.
Right.
Because unless you use... you probably have to use enriched flour, because all white flour is enriched, and pastries generally are made with white flour. So I don't know what the deal is, but my guess is you can't find one that doesn't have thiamine mononitrate or riboflavin from, you know, folic acid from China, or ferrous sulfate. The ferrous sulfate might be domestic, but still, you know, it's traveled all over.
So we're talking a little bit about the ingredients that lend distance and time to our food so that we can keep them on the shelves longer and make a lot more money with them, too, when you come to think about it. And one of the things that seems to stand out is the polysorbate 60, which captured your daughter's attention, Steve Ettlinger, and led to a format for your book, Twinkie Deconstructed. And so on the trail of this polysorbate 60, you tell about how there's a factory on the East Coast someplace that's owned by two companies. Tell us that story. It's immensely fascinating.
Oh, okay. But we also have to get back to the ingredients in polysorbate 60 and what it is. But there is a factory that's been on the Delaware River, just below the Delaware Memorial Bridge, for like 100 years. And mostly was making explosives. Over the years, and they found that one of their byproducts was a corn sugar that actually could be harvested, and that led them to making some food products. And over the years, the chemical business evolved, and the companies were bought and sold and traded and all that. And DuPonts are down there and so forth, making, you know, they all started making gunpowder and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the military-industrial complex.
Talk about from guns to butter?
Yeah, well, they had to switch especially after World War II, and they started making chemicals that they thought would be useful to consumers. Of course, in the early 50s, there was a huge drive to create consumer-friendly products, so all the chemists were at work trying to figure out what reactions they could create that would end up making food things. And one of them, it turned out, was handed to us by the losing Germans, World War II. Scientists went over to IG Farben, the big chemical company, and found they had figured out a way to react a toxic explosive gas with a with any type of chemical. In this case, it was one that is a weak emulsifier, and turn it into a really strong emulsifier. That's how polysorbate 60 was invented. The weak emulsifier is still used on its own. You see it, SMS, it's listed as in breads a lot. But when they hit it with a toxic explosive gas, it becomes this tan goo that is a great egg yolk substitute, and which is almost impossible to wash off your hands. It's very strong.
And that's that tan glue is a substance that the engineer told you not to put in your mouth. Because
he sent me a quart of it as a sample. I thought, that's cool. And can I taste it? He said, don't taste it. You won't be able to taste anything else for a week. So I presume that's what's coating my tongue and my teeth after I eat a Twinkie, although maybe just be the oil. Who knows? It's probably, the oil enhanced by this polysorbate 60. It's so strong, it works in minute doses.
Well,
these things are only present in little grams and micrograms in your Twinkie.
So the factory that was really interesting, because there's a factory that owned by two companies.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to go visit them, and I happened to be driving by. So I went down there, and I couldn't understand. I'd been corresponding with these people, and it sounded like they were near each other, but I was corresponding with people who really wouldn't say where they were or didn't know, because they were actually on the representing the factory, but their office was miles away.
Right.
And I finally go down there with my family, and I drive up, and there's the guardhouse. And the barbed wire on top of the cyclone fence and all that. And there are the two companies. One is in an office building to the left and one to the right. But there's only one factory. So I found out what happened is that one factory makes some of the handles the feedstock and the first chemical reactions. Then they pipe it, one inch to another machine that's owned by the other factory. But the people don't talk to each other.
Wow.
It was very strange.
And that is the polysorbate 60 that replaces the butter in eggs?
Well, mostly the egg yolk. It's a great emulsifier. And that chemical, those chemical companies that were sharing a plant were sort of typical. As I was talking to the chemical companies, they were constantly being bought and sold and divided up and regrouped. Someone might work at the plant for 30 years and have 30 bosses. Mostly that's a recent phenomenon.
Okay, folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about the ingredients in our industrial foods, the ingredients that give foods distance and time that they otherwise would not have. And we're talking with Steve Ettlinger, who is the author of Twinkies Deconstructed, a fun story about those ingredients inside our industrial foods. Right back, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Do stay tuned. Fine wine, it is said, is a product of its terroir, or place. The better the terroir, the better the wine. Twinkies, on the other hand, like most industrial food, has no terroir. It doesn't come from any one place. It comes from a whole bunch of places. How many different places, Steve Ettlinger?
How many different places? Uncountable.
Uncountable.
Uncountable, yes.
Twinkies come from an uncountable number of places.
Right. I traveled and researched for several years to try to go to or learn about where each chemical used to make the Twinkie ingredients comes from. I broke everything down by its chemical equation and went back to the raw ingredients for each one. And I was mightily surprised. I couldn't travel to every place, but a lot of it comes out of the ground in the form of oil or gas, which can come from anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world, yeah.
Limestone. I broke it down by animal, vegetable, mineral. limestone, most of it comes from one company in the Ozarks that mines it. The limestone is used to make the calcium that goes into monocalcium phosphate, which is in your baking powder. What's the calcium source? Limestone. Calcium lactate. Caseinate.
It seems like we've just taken over Mother Nature in this whole process, haven't we?
Yeah.
Re-engineered the whole thing.
Yeah, break it down and put it back together again.
One quick question. Why so much use of soybean these days? My wife gets so angry. She goes to find bread, and all it seems like all of the breads now have soybeans in them. Why so much soybean?
Well, there's a really long answer to that, but I'll try to sum it up in just a few words. And I've been reading about it recently because I just got back yesterday from Illinois, I was in the center of Illinois. I visited, in fact, two of the big processors. One of them processes 500 million bushels of soybeans every day in Decatur, Illinois, and I photographed it and talked to some people there. The negative answer is, well, the soybean processors, the major huge companies who have to find new ways to squeeze more dollars out of the soybean because they're invested in that. Mm-hmm. That's their thing. And we've had government policy that supported that over the years, starting with Nixon primarily, that created a surplus of soybeans and corn. So, you know, it led into a vicious circle of the big food processors having to find new ways to use that surplus so they could make even more money. That's the sort of the bitter negative answer. And the positive answer, which I was getting to a certain extent from farmers and executives there, is, well, we've got to feed the world. We've got to feed the world. And we can make many more products out of the soybean than you could ever dream of. It's so much better than just limiting yourself to the soybean, which is relatively... Well, they don't see it as inedible, but it's rarely eaten just as a soybean. I eat it. I had some last night in a Japanese restaurant, that's not a big volume.
Right. Well, Steve Ettlinger, we want to thank you so much for joining us. It's been great talking a little bit about the ingredients that go into Twinkies. And, of course, it's the ingredients that hold our attention because they really point out the changing nature of the food that we eat. You know, in the 1930s, yeah, we used to eat Twinkies that came right from the factory, and they only lasted a couple days. But, boy, I bet they didn't leave this taste that I have in my mouth.
No. Go whip up some fresh cream. You'll see it's a big difference.
A big difference. Well, we thank you so much for joining us, Steve. Really appreciate your attendance with us today. Steve Ettlinger, the author of Twinkies Deconstructed. If you want to know what's inside food, read What's Inside the Twinkies with Twinkies Deconstructed. Thank you so much. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.